各位观众朋友大家好，欢迎收看美国观察，我是林森。首先来关注今天的重要新闻。俄罗斯地方官员7月3日称，靠近乌克兰的俄罗斯南部城市比尔格罗德市至少有3人被炸死，几十栋住宅受损。莫斯科称这是乌克兰的一次导弹攻击造成的。另一方面，乌克兰东部省份卢甘斯克最后一个大堡垒利西昌斯克的战斗也越来越激烈。乌克兰总统泽连斯基的顾问奥列克西·阿列斯托维奇说，俄军终于渡过北顿涅茨克河，从北部逼近这座城市。他承认这座城市可能会沦陷，他同时表示前线得到的西方武器越多，形势就越有利于。美国7月1日宣布向乌克兰追加了$8.2亿的军事援助的细节，包括两个先进的地对空导弹系统。这套防空系统可以帮助乌军防御巡航导弹和飞机。五角大楼说，拜登政府如今已向乌克兰送去了$76亿的安全援助。据路透社7月1日的消息说，美国官方认为目前尚未发现中国帮助俄罗斯规避西方制裁或者向俄罗斯提供军事设备。路透社援引一名不愿透露姓名的白宫高级官员的话说，美国政府对中国某些企业采取的执法措施只是针对这些企业个体，而不是中国政府。美国商务部在6月28日把5家中国企业列入了贸易黑名单，理由是他们涉嫌为俄罗斯的军事和国防工业基础提供支持。这五家企业都是位于中国境内的实体。俄乌战争爆发后，美国政府就警告说，如果中国向俄罗斯的军事行动提供实质性的支持，将会引起严重的后果，包括制裁。但是此后，美国政府数次公开表示，美方尚未发现中国向莫斯科提供重要的军事和经济支持。这名白宫官员说，我们没有看到中国进行了系统性的规避制裁，或者是为俄罗斯提供军事设备的行为。美军参谋长联席会议主席马克·米利将军表示，中国对台湾的攻击并非迫在眉睫，但是美国正在非常密切地观察局势。据英国广播公司 BBC 7月3日报道，米利将军说，在能力方面，他认为中国显然正在发展一种能力。他说，习近平曾经在公开论坛和讲话中提到，他号召解放军发展在某个时间点进攻台湾的能力。米利将军还说，目前没有任何迫在眉睫的迹象或者警示，但是他同时强调，美国在非常非常密切地观察局势。北京坚称台湾是中国的一部分，并多次宣称必要时会不惜一切代价，包括使用武力实现台湾与中国大陆的统一。而近些年，北京更是加剧了对台湾的军事威胁和骚扰。7月4日是美国独立日，这一节日的小长假开局兴旺，机场的客流量超过了2019年新冠疫情前的水平。运输安全局的估计，本次长周末会非常的繁忙。美国运输安全局6月30日在机场总共安检了240多万旅客，根据该局的数据，这超过了2019年的水平，而且与去年相比高出了 110%。 美国汽车协会预计周末将会有近4800万人从家旅行到至少50英里以外的地方，这个人数只比2019年略低。美国汽车协会说，尽管平均汽油的价格接近每加仑5美元，但是开车出行的人数将会创下纪录。休闲油在今年反弹，抵消了商务油和国际航空旅行低迷的局面。不过乘飞机出行的总人数还是没有恢复到疫情前的水平。运输安全局今年6月安检的人数比2019年同期少了11%。今年纽约国会选区的重新划分给中期选举增添了变数。经过重划的第10选区包括曼哈顿华埠、布鲁克林八大道等华裔聚居的地区，亚裔的选民比例约占20%。 华裔女议员牛玉林决定竞选这个国会众议员的席位。她已经连任了三届纽约州的众议员，选区包括曼哈顿的华部。她曾因对待警民冲突的态度受到部分华人选民的质疑，她支持的亚裔细分法案也被一些选民诟病。牛玉林表示，她希望通过更多的沟通和理解，为亚裔美国人争取到更多的资源和话语权。
I know that Senator Zheng Liu and you just secured $20 million.
Yes.
So how did you secure that, and how do you plan to spend it?
So we already have a plan. This is a plan that was made up by our community members, by the organizations that serve us on the community level, and are based off of the needs that we've been seeing throughout the city and the state. And so we have... And we had an ask of actually $64.5 million. But we got $20 million, which is the most that we've ever gotten for the Asian American community. I want to remind folks that, you know, this is actually money that's owed to us. This isn't money that, you know, that's like, you know, some kind of give, right? Because, so I'm just going to give a little bit of history, if that's okay. But, you know, when I first became the assembly member representing Manhattan's Chinatown, we doubled the amount of Asian Americans representing our state, and so that means that we had two Asian American legislators. You know, it was Assemblymember Ron Kim and myself, and we were both on the assembly side, and we didn't have any senators, and it was really the first time that we had the ability to even ask for an Asian Pacific American task force. And so our speaker, after I was elected, helped to form the first Asian Pacific American task force. And this is a task force that is actually focused on issues for our communities, the issues that our communities care about. And that was the first time that we ever had any kind of policy body to be able to think about these issues. As I was looking through different things, trying to figure out what we can do for our communities, and looking at all of the different, historical things that have made it so that we've been left out, and I realized that we've been completely left out of our state's budget. And, yes, there were a couple of times when some dollars would come in through, member items or program dollars or capital dollar projects that were just a one-time give, but we were never a line item. We were never a priority for our state. Our budgets really show what our values are, and it was never a priority item for us to care about our Asian American communities. And so the first time, it was a $174 billion budget. I still very, very clearly remember. And I was finally able to get $300,000 for our community organizations. And then we were able to get a little bit more, so $600,000. And then finally last year, we were able to get $10 million for the very first time ever. And then now we were able to secure $20 million. So with a lot more representation, with John Liu in office, Kevin Thomas in office, Jeremy Cooney in office, with Zoran Mamdani as my now co-chair of the APA task force, with new Asian American representation in our body, this is why it's so important to have representation. This is why it's so important to have that diversity, because with that lens and with the voices, we were able to secure these dollars, and we were able to make sure that our Asian American communities are able to have the representation it deserves. Ron and I started the fight, but it takes a lot more than two people to be able to get that to the result that we need.
Of course, it's a good thing. I mean, for the Asian American community, it's a good thing to have representatives. It's good to have funding coming in. But I mean, putting that in the context that we're in New York, yeah, with so many Asian American population.
This city has 18%.
Yeah.
18%. And we are the largest growing ethnic and minority group. We're also the largest growing undocumented group. And yet we have the least amount of social services, the least amount of benefits, the least amount of funding.
I mean, why is it like that?
It's historic, really. And I think that we can really kind of look at you know, a lot of the anti-Asian sentiments, a lot of the things that are happening right now is tied in as well, right? People want us to have like a single fix or like some kind of magic potion or bullet to fix the big issues, but people forget that the history of us being here in this country also was started with hatred and neglect and alienation. I mean, I think that this is where, you know, we have to really put ourselves into a timeline and see how far we have come very quickly in actuality, even though, you know, it might seem like it's been forever. But I think that, you know, when we're looking at how we are dismantling some of those very historic pieces of what makes up our country. Like, this is why studying Asian American history is so important. This is why we have to have Asian American history in our textbooks. This is a bill that we need to pass. This is something that we need to talk about, because this history is so important, because this is how we indicate how we've belonged here and how we've been here and how we actually deserve, you know, to have the benefits and the actual, you know, country include us in everything, because we're written out. And there's two stereotypes that we all know about, right? The perpetual foreigner syndrome, right? And the model minority myth. And both of these stereotypes result in the same thing. And people don't realize that neither of these things are good. They're all bad. And it's always to deprive us, right, of representation, of resources. So the model minority myth, they're saying, well, you're doing great, so you don't need anything from us. We don't need to give you anything. Result, we don't give you anything. Perpetual foreigner syndrome. You don't belong here. You're not one of us. And so therefore, we don't need to give you anything. Result, we don't need to give you anything. So time after time after time, the stereotypes make it so that we don't have resources. And so that's why we're not in the budget. That's why we don't have any resources. That's why people don't care about whether or not there's language access. This is why it's so important for us to be able to have, you know, these conversations, this dialogue amongst our colleagues.
But are we doing anything? Are Asian Americans doing anything to change this status quo?
I think that we are by having more representation. We are having more representation, and therefore we are asking for people to understand that things are not all good for us, right? And there is no, like, asking to break that myth. The myth is unreal. Like, it's not real. It's a myth. And so the fact is this. 1 in 4 Asian Americans here in New York lives in poverty. We are the most impoverished ethnic group in the entire state and in the entire city. And I think that it's really, you know, clear that we're not doing well. So when you have people aggregating that data and saying like, oh, you know, we don't have to give you resources, that makes it so that you don't have resources. So what we need is for us to actually have the conversation about what's actually happening. If 1 in 4 Asian Americans is living in poverty, that's not making it, right?
For your current district, I think 40% of them are Asian Americans. And what are some most pressing issues for them?
Yeah, I mean, so some of the biggest issues here is housing. I mean, housing is very difficult. It's expensive. 1/3 of my district is also public housing. A lot of Asian Americans actually live in public housing and in, you know, NYCHA, right? And so when there are, you know, needs for fixes, for hot water, heat, any of these, like, basic necessities, you know, it's really difficult for them to fill out a form, tell people, like, that they have these needs, so they call our office. And so there's language barriers, there's lack of access, and it's even without language barriers, it's hard to get, you know, NYCHA and public housing to respond, you know. So I think it's really necessary for us to, you know where some of these needs are. So it's housing. The other thing is language access issues, you know. Our office often ends up being the translator for so many different, you know, issues that our constituents face. You know, we do, you know, help them to read their mail. Some people have been defrauded. People have had fraudulent activity happen to them. right? So we have seen that happen with a lot of our seniors, just in the robocalls alone. You know, the ones that say that we're the Chinese embassy, you have a package waiting for you. And because it's in Chinese, so many of our seniors fall for the scam. And we actually had millions of dollars fleeced from our seniors. They actually stole millions of dollars from people. And so this is why I have a piece of legislation that will, first off, there's one to try to end robocalls. The second one is one that will help to stop and prohibit fraud. So and fraudulent practices, unfair practices, deceptive practices, and abusive practices. We've seen that happen throughout our small business community. We've seen it happen to many of our seniors, to people with disabilities, and we've seen, you know, people especially with language access issues get, you know, taken advantage of. So this kind of bill came from all of, you know, these complaints that we've had over the past. There was a scam that was going around where, you know, you sign a paper and all of a sudden your utility bill is like $1,000 more. You know, and that happened to so many of our constituents here, you know, and I think that it's really important for us to be able to help to make sure that people are not getting defrauded.
And I also want to ask about police reform, and a question comes in two parts. First part is that how's your constituency react to this movement, if you will? And second is that I want to hear your side of the story to that New York Post article.
Oh, I mean, that was, like, so stupid. I can't even... I mean, apparently, you know, apparently, like, a mistaken like is enough to be on the front page of a paper, you know? I mean, how many times have you browsed through Instagram and your thumb, like, presses on a like? And, you know, I don't even know, like, why that was an issue, and that was a... I mean, apparently, I am... that famous. I don't know what else to say.
In reality, like, how bad is the conflict between the police and the people here in New York?
I mean, I think that there is constant conflict between, you know, the police and people in New York. And it's gotten and reached a peak that I think is very dangerous, and I think that it's always in this under your skin kind of feeling, you know. So I was actually walking past the M15 bus stop, and I was just walking past, and there were police officers who had pulled these Chinese seniors off of the bus, and so they were confused, and they were given fines and tickets based off of them not paying for the fare. And they didn't know that they had to pay for fare beforehand and that they were actually on an M15 Express. And so there were the little machines that helped you to... But they're so used to taking the M15 and just scanning in. But the M15 Express makes it so that you have to get a ticket first and then get onto the bus. So they were confused. But even though I explained this to them, so they stopped me and they asked me to translate to them that they were going to get a fine. And, you know, I was like, okay, I will translate it. And so I told them, like, you know, and they wanted their ID, they wanted their information. And this lady, you know, didn't know how to, you know, give her what she wanted. And she was getting very upset, very agitated. And she was like, I don't know what I did. And, you know, I have to get to my daughter. And, like, you know, she's waiting for me, you know. And so, like, they were just very, very agitated about the whole situation. And they started to give them the fines. These fines are humongous, you know? I couldn't believe that they were fining them for a very honest mistake. And I told the officer, I was like, well, I don't think that any of them meant to. And she was just like, Miss, I'm not asking your opinion. And I was like, okay, well, you asked me to translate, but I guess I'm just a translator. Like, she stopped me on the street to have me translate, and then I told her the story, and I was like, they were not meaning to, you know, get onto the wrong bus. They didn't want to be on the wrong bus, obviously, and they were just so used to scanning in once they were paying for their, you know, they have all Metro cards. They just didn't know.
Is there anything you can do in Albany?
I mean, so one of the big things that I'm trying to do is to make sure that there's language access services for everyone, right? One of the biggest things that, you know, I think is important for accessing and having language access services is actually the data disaggregation bill that was passed, and we passed it. And it's very, very important for us to actually have services that will provide the language, you know, services for the most, you know, people that we can serve at a time, right? So it's really just making sure that the services are the right languages for the right communities, right?
And as you said in your policies, in your politics, you're open, right? You're the progressive of the progressives.
I am progressive. But I think that, you know, a lot of times it's about listening and understanding where other people are coming from, because I don't think that there's any, like, wrong point of view. I think that it's really about where you're coming from in that point of view.
Does your progressiveness ever become a problem between you and your voters?
It's a very important thing to communicate and to also to listen, you know, because we are all going to have different places where we come from and different reasons why we believe what we do. But there's nothing wrong with believing different things. It's just about understanding, like, why, and then figuring out how to problem solve. And I will say that, you know, I don't think that, you know, there's anything wrong with delivering resources, making sure that your constituents have the things that they need, and doing all of the work to make sure that people are having an advocate, a great advocate, to fight for their housing, you know, the tickets on their small business, times when they need to have somebody advocate for them at the Department of Health, or to help them with their unemployment insurance or their SNAP benefits. And, like, you know, that kind of work on the ground is the one that is, like, the most necessary, the constituent work and all of those things. And then, you know, believing that, you know, we want the same things is, like, the most important thing.
Who inspired you to get into politics in the first place?
I've had amazing mentors like Sharon Tomiko Santos in Washington State. She's a fantastic leader and somebody who I looked up to for a lot of my political career, because I believed that it could happen, that a woman could actually be a state rep, right? That an Asian woman could actually be elected. And I got to see Gary Locke be elected as governor. I thought that was really amazing. You know, they have that whole saying, like, if you can see it, you can be it. I'm just lucky to have a lot of amazing examples of what is a good leader. And I think that, you know, my mentors, like I was saying, were very wonderful in helping me to kind of shape my worldview. And I think that it's really important for us to be able to have, you know, that pipeline of helping more people to be able to have, you know, the eagerness to participate in government. I think it's important for us to have, you know, civic engagement in our communities. I think that, you know, one of the things that I saw was a lack of representation. And, you know, my hope and my goal is still to become obsolete, actually, and to one day not be the person to have to break these ceilings and to, you know, not have to be in office. I'm wanting that, actually. And I think that, you know, my goal is to break that myth of how government is inaccessible and these things just happen to us. Or, like, you know, I want people to understand that there is no big secret to accessing government, that we can make it happen if we want to.
正在收看《美国观察》。在基辅郊外，曾经被俄罗斯人占领并且使用过的布查市的一片区域，乌克兰平民现在拿起武器参加实地军事训练，经过各种场合的战术培训，学习相互合作的团队精神。平民也有能力保护自己和他们的城市，免受来自俄罗斯再次入侵的潜在的威胁。
Учения здесь, насколько я знаю, происходят постоянно. То есть происходит ротация, две недели одни группы, потом их отправляют на дежурство на позиции, приходят новые. Добровольцев точно много. До сих пор существует очередь в военкоматах для того, чтобы попасть в вооруженные силы.
Часть рядового состава не военнослужащие. Это просто гражданские лица, которые хотят стать на стражу Украины. И когда придут, допустим, еще раз, не дай бог, орки, мы, думаю, будем готовы их встретить не так, как первый раз. Потому что мы не были готовы до этого.
台湾海峡中的群岛澎湖距离台湾岛西岸约50公里，具有重要的战略意义。这里是台湾的旅游胜地，有碧蓝的海水、美丽的沙滩和飞翔的海鸟，但这里的平静每天都被战斗机的轰鸣声打断。澎湖的特殊地理位置意味着一旦中国动武，这里很可能首先成为前线。面对潜在的军事威胁，居住在澎湖的当地人依旧乐观的，他们也喜欢自己的生活方式，不愿意改变自己的身份。
的战略意义啊，是远高于其他外岛。一旦澎湖落入解放军的手里啊，那么它有这种中间的踏板上面，它在这种短程的突击制空，像直升机的攻击的能力会迅速的增加。
你说大陆现在要来侵略台湾，第一个先也是先把澎湖拿下来啊，那很方便嘛，船过来包围一下就可以拿得下来。但是你说要叫做成一个中国人、大陆人，我是很不喜欢的、啊。大家和和气气的，啊，不要动刀动枪嘛，动刀动枪有什么用？啊，你强迫要嫁给你，那也得不到什么啊。他这个样子，我们很不舒服。
我们今天不是要去欺负人家，还是要图什么？我们只是说我这里是我的家，大家当个好邻居，当个好亲戚。其实说实在的，我对两岸说会多紧张的状况还好。其实两岸都是同文同种，其实都没有人愿意说一打仗还是干什么，谁愿意，对不对？啊，这个本来就大家都很和谐啊，啊，上面的事情我们不管了。
以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，我们下次节目再见。